The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
So I have for the second time today the privilege of introducing Roger and Jan Smith. They come from Louisiana, where he is a medical doctor and Jan manages the horse farm and business. All four of their adult children were homeschooled until the college years, and home education has been an exciting journey for them, where they became experts in home and family management, leadership, and community service. They continue to serve their church and community as mentors and teachers, as well as serving on the board of their state homeschool organization and on the board of the National Alliance Christian Home Education Leaders. Dr. Smith produces a weekly video blog on parenting. This talk is entitled, Is There a Different Way? Help Me to Know My Options. Here are Dr. Roger and Jan Smith. Please welcome them warmly.
So, welcome back. I see a lot of familiar faces after another day and a half, but some of you may be totally new to us, and so if you are, we're very casual. And so this is our most casual of presentations. And in fact, I'll almost hesitate to call it a presentation. It's almost a discussion. And so the whole concept of this talk or this time period is to learn the right way to home educate, which is a trick question, a trick idea. Because there is no singular right way. There are good ways, and there are better ways, but they all work. The whole idea is that if your home works, your home education will work. And so we're going to talk about options of ways that you may, different approaches you may take in your home education, and help you to find tools that will help to match you and your student to the methods and the curriculum and the tools.
I'm really glad to see the number of fathers in here, because sometimes, sometimes the father can be a problem because he's not gotten the same vision. Maybe he hasn't been to these workshops or hasn't watched the videos that you've seen or the online classes that you may have participated in. And so you've loosened your ideology a little bit about what school can look like, and that may make your husband really nervous that you're not doing school. You know what I'm saying? So the two of you need to get on the same page, and you need to ask God, if you're a mom that you're here and you go, okay, I need to take a breath here and do things differently next year, that you've got to ask God to somehow help your husband to get on the same page as you and to have the same vision for the heart of the homeschool that you want to accomplish. Because I have a friend, actually it's my daughter-in-law's mom. All three of our sons married homeschool gals, and all three of their homeschools were different than what ours were. Ours was a much freer environment, and two of the three daughter-in-laws were raised very much in a box curriculum mindset. And one of those, a very strict school-type structure. They were both school teachers that the wife chose, they chose as a couple for the wife to go home in school, but the father pretty much insisted that they stay strict. They did a Becca kind of A to Z from K to 12. And their children did well, and they were fine. But when Zan's book, the Burnout book, came out, and if you haven't gotten a copy of that, I highly recommend you ask Zan about it, because she's got...
I think the title of it is Unharmed, or... What's the title of the book? Do you remember?
But BJU Press put it out, and they're not charging. And if you participate in an event like this that she's at, you can ask her for it, and she will give you a copy. It's excellent. But I was listening to an audio version of that as we were driving to go take care of the grandchildren together. This mother-in-law and I, well, my daughter-in-law's mother. And she started crying. Now, her children are all grown. The youngest is 22. But she started crying as she was listening to Zan teach. And she said, I wish I had known this when I was 25 instead of 45. She said, because I just was so bound up. We were so imprisoned to school because, you know, my husband would come home at the end of every day and want to see proof that we had done school. And he held me so accountable in a difficult way. And she said, it took the joy out of our journey when I felt bound to have to accomplish a set amount of things every day. So it could be your husband, and it could be that you're chained to a situation because of fear that you have to use an approved curriculum, that you have to send in all your tests, and you have to, you know, have somebody else holding you accountable. Now, we all need accountability, but there's an unhealthy accountability and a healthy accountability. And I pray today at the end of our time together, that if you are feeling bound, you know, like ball and chain bound to something, that at the end of this session, that God will give you enough confidence to say, okay, together, we're going to try to seek God, to hear his voice, and to move forward with what our children need for what's going to be better and healthier for me as a mom and for us as a family. Can we partner and agree that we're going to be open to hearing the Spirit of God and to having a less stressful, a less difficult time? Please do not hear us say that academics are not important, because we're not saying that. All, you know, three of our four children went to school on academic scholarships to college. They scored very high on their standardized test, but their education was much different than some of my friends who were bound to doing school, and my children scored a lot higher than theirs on their ACT and SATs.
So there is a resource that you may reference as you are, if you're not real familiar with these the approaches, you may go to a place called simplycharlottemason.com. Simplycharlottemason.com. They have a tool on there called the 5 Flavors of Homeschooling, and that's what we're going to kind of use as our structure to discuss this. Because there are 5 general categories of educational approaches, not just homeschool approaches, but education approaches. The curriculum that you'll see out in by different vendors will fall into one of these 5 categories. And sometimes you look at a curriculum and you don't recognize it for what it is, because you see it as, it's interesting. You know, the pictures are great. You like the covers, and the people are nice. And it's a good product, but maybe it doesn't fit you because you didn't recognize that it's a style that's different than your style of approaching learning. And so we want to give you the structure of understanding the educational approaches, and then there is a test. If one of them doesn't just ring true with your spirit, you go, I don't know, I think I'm that, or I think that this describes the way that won't, and you don't really know where you fall. The 5 Flavors of Homeschooling webpage has a test that you can take that you can rate yourself, and at the end it kind of says, okay, you're a combination of these two. So it's a great tool, and so we're going to give you the kind of the background, the structure, the overarching picture, and let me first say this. We know hundreds of homeschool families each have done some of the different ones, okay, in all 5 of these categories. They all work. Some are going to be easier for you than another. So generally we say, if you are crying and your children are crying, you're probably using the wrong approach for your family. It would be the right approach for your neighbor. or someone else. So we tend to compare ourselves to those that, you know, that we know that their children look like they are doing great. So we're going to do what they do. And sometimes that is the right thing for you to do. But with this decision-making information, hopefully you'll go, wow, that's great for them, but I couldn't do that. And so, anyway, well, let's...
Typically, when we have a brand new family that's starting homeschooling, they are so overwhelmed with the changes that are taking place in their family that we tend to recommend, why don't you just get, I think I may have just lost my battery.
Okay, you can talk right next to me.
Why don't you go ahead and choose, whoops, sorry about that, something like My Father's World or Bob Jones or something that's a grade level type curriculum that's a boxed set. That way you don't have to make the decision about what you're going to do for the next 2 months. So that I know that the curriculum Gather Round, which is a unit study based, started here in Canada, that is also a choice that a lot of new homeschool families have used successfully, where you have all the children doing the same study of the same topic, but on different levels. And it kind of brings it all together. We did a unit study approach. A unit study, living books was the approach that we took. But now we didn't have curriculum. I designed the unit studies.
So let's pause here and talk about the five categories. And I'm going to walk.
I was talking about traditional.
Okay, you stand over there. And I'm going to stand over here. We're going to be the two extremes.
Okay.
And we say that they're extremes because they are furthest from one another, not that they are extreme in their strategy. And so, traditional.
This is where you buy a curriculum, and it comes and has every subject for your child. It has the workbooks, the teacher manuals, and it tells you what to say, what to do, and how to approach it. It has tests for your children, and, you know, it's in a box. It's there. It's ready for you to do. It takes some of the guesswork out. It makes you feel more secure often because you think, okay, I'm doing it right. But it may not be right for your kids, and you'll be able to get a feel for it as you begin to learn and educate yourself, which as a homeschool mom, you're going to have to do. You're going to have to educate yourself about learning styles like Zan was talking about. How many of you heard Zan's last talk? And she was talking about her student, and so she started with a box curriculum that did not work for them. But now you can use a box curriculum and not have to do every question and say everything that they say to say and do everything that's in that box. You can use it and adapt it. And that is the big, other big lesson that all of the ways and approaches to homeschooling work, and you can adapt any curriculum that you buy to work for your family.
So how many of you in here did not go, as in your education, to a traditional school? Anybody in here? Okay, yep. There's just a few of you that did not go to a traditional school. So when we talk about traditional approach, it's what you're thinking of as school because that's your experience. You had a subject and it had its own book, and you had lessons that were prescribed. They were textbooks. So we refer to it, another way we say it is that this is a textbook approach. So that's traditional. That's one extreme. Okay? The other extreme over here is unschooling. Unschooling sounds like don't learn. Don't, you know, educate, but it doesn't mean that. It means it has no form, no prescribed next step that is the thing you're going to learn next. And it is scary to people who are really steeped in traditional steps of textbook, you turn to the next chapter, and then you can take the chapter test before you go to the, you know, so it's very stepwise. This one, it's you wake up, or you plan your day. It's not necessarily day by day, but maybe, what are we going to learn about this year? And then what the passion is of the student will describe or will design what you go about learning. And so it
involves hands-on activities where they're involved in some sort of project. You now, with the computer and the internet, that's easier to do some of that type of accessing the information in the world that, you know, you just have a lot of resources at your fingertips. But unschooling does not mean not schooling. It just means doing things differently and allowing learning to progress at a different rate.
And so the unschoolers will say things like this: all of life is school. Okay, you ever heard that? Yeah, we said that a lot. All of life is school. So learning as you're going, you learn at the grocery store when you're shopping and comparing brands and prices and things like that, and that's their math and decision making and logic. And you know, you learn as you're going going on your family vacation. You're just learning as you encounter things in life, and it doesn't have a boundary. You don't know when you start school and when you stop school, because all of life is school. Okay, so you can see that this one has more of a start and stop time and a compartmentalization, and this one, you don't even know when it is. It's all the time, you know, so it's no on and off switch. So those are the two extremes.
Remember, when you're using a traditional book, that you do not always have to do every problem on every page or answer every question. And instead of having your student write it out in the book, maybe you can do it. He's an auditory learner, and so maybe you can to discuss it more. Let's take Saxon math, for example, that some people love the repetitive nature. Other people have children that are frustrated by that. And so for mine that were really skilled in math, I would have them this week do the even and next week do the odd. As long as they were getting most of those correct, or almost all of those correct, then I would not have them go back and do it. If I could see that they were really struggling and didn't understand it yet, then they would go back and do the remaining problems just for extra reinforcement. But you as a teacher, you've got to give yourself permission to make some choices, because you know your child, you know their individual needs, and you can tailor or adapt things without ditching the whole process that year. If something you've already bought, adapt it and make it flexible to the needs of you and your student. Another approach that's similar to a traditional approach is classical. The classical learning model. And classical sounds very almost spiritual, you know, but it is a difference in mindset and approach. And we incorporated some classical tent things, you know, like when ours were young. The first stage is one where you do a lot of memorization, the grammar stage. In the, you know, like 6 to 10-year-olds, they have CDs that you listen to often that you can have playing in the car, and they do things in a sequential order, and that you can, there's not just classical conversations, which is a curriculum that is established for you. You pay a fee, you join a community, and that's a big plus about classical conversation, is somebody's already designed that curriculum choice for you, and it's lined out from kindergarten through graduation, and you just do the program. And that works great for some kids. In fact, I've known one mom who had done several different approaches, and her last thing she did was classical conversation, and I felt that youngest child far and away had a better education than some of the ones that she did to start with, because she wasn't as disciplined. But I've also known some families that did classical conversation that it worked great for the first two and maybe terrible for the third one. It's a problem, because then you don't want to give up your community. Your whole, you know, all of life is kind of surrounded by this group. and yet you've got this child that's not fitting in. It's a you know, a square peg in a round hole. So that's one of the things. Another thing I've noticed with classical education is sometimes there's a little superiority that their way is the best way and the right way. And if you're not doing classical, well, you're just missing out. You're not quite as academic, not spiritual, so, but it's just be careful that your way is the best way. If you're not doing unit studies, or unschoolers tend to be a little bit like that too, that you bless your heart, you'll get here one day, you know, you'll be free one day. So we've got to be careful in our attitudes, because all of the approaches work. And to be flexible, that you've got one child that it works well and another child that it may not work.
Yeah, so in that classical model, there is what's called the trivium. If you hear this, that they move from the grammar stage, which is the language developmental stage in the early years of the 6 to 10 year olds, and then they move to a dialectic, or more of a speech or memorization stage, where they memorize lots of things. And there's a real value in memorization and recitation of things. And so this has lots of really good things. And then they move from that dialectic or recitation, reciting things, to the what's called the rhetoric, where they are actually practicing using logic and analysis in their kind of the high school years. And so you can see how those three kind of fit together. And that classical model, you know, the traditional learners were like, I'm thinking Hippocrates, but that's not the right one. Who was the other Greek scholar? Socrates, you know, and how it really was based on his way of training his students, where he would have, you know, give them logical questions to analyze and discuss. And so sometimes that model fits families very well and students very well. And so, but it does tend to, we found that folks tend to get puffed up about it. And so be careful. If that's a good model for you, it's not the right model for everyone else.
Classical Conversations is not the only classical curriculum that's available.
That's right.
You have Veritas Press, Tapestry of Grace, Mystery of History, which is available right out here. They tend to be a classical model where it builds one on the other. So there's several different ones. Well-Trained Mind. So know that you can take those approaches, or you can take a different approach.
So can you see how moving, that this is the traditional model, textbook model, this is a little bit, it involves some features of that, but has a little bit more kind of discussion, interaction, you know, it's still a little bit structured in the sense that you have these, you know, recitings and memorizations of set passages and things. And so it's not just the textbook workbook pages. It's more of a verbal model of the same thing. And then we move.
Charlotte Mason, or literature-based approach. So you have Beautiful Freet, Greenleaf Press, Heart of Dakota. You have Sunlight. Do y'all have these curriculums here? Are y'all ever heard of these? So
no.
Anyway, there's five in a row. There's several different things that are literature based, and I know that the Gather Round, she does a lot literature based as well. But it is we feel like no matter what curriculum you use and what approach you use, that reading should be a part of that. Read alouds and reading as a family should be a part of any curriculum approach that you use.
So when Jan would use this Charlotte Mason approach in some of her education, instead of learning history of World War II from a textbook, which is fine, and which gives you the facts, you know, the dates, the facts, the people, and it shows maps and you know, all those types of information, she would take a novel that was written about a family that lived in World War II, and she saw the dynamics of what the family saw, what they experienced, what they heard and smelled, and all of that. And can you see how you could get the same information, but it's in a story? And for some people, those living books is what brings the information to life. And so a literature-based approach is called a living books approach, or Charlotte Mason. Those all are the same grouping. And so it's just the lingo of the group.
Now you have whole sectors of the homeschool movement that you have in each of these curriculum approach type of things, that they become a following, you know, not a cult following, but I'm telling you, you have some Charlotte Mason people that is the way, the only way. Don't even consider anything that's not Charlotte Mason. So be careful, because like I was a Charlotte Mason fan, and I read her books, and I incorporated a lot of her teachings into the way I approached homeschooling. But I pretty much did Charlotte Mason in with unit studies. And so in the unit studies, we had so much fun. And I, like I say, I started off doing what I did not understand. So we started with World War II and did a whole unit study around that. Now, Konos was available. It's still available. It was one of the few that was available.
K-O-N-O-S. It was one of the first unit studies.
It was popular back when I was homeschooling, like Gather Round is now. So I'm not trying to sell any kind of curriculum, but I'm saying that the freedom that we felt at that time was really, you know, exciting. Nobody was looking over my shoulder because I was a weird homeschooler, you know, and they didn't know what to do with our family. But today you have people talking about this on Facebook and in a group, and, you know, so you can really feel the rub if you're not doing a particular kind of thing. Believe me when I say every approach can work for you, but you've got to have flexibility to adapt what you're doing, because we were so unit study literature based that my daughter, who was scoring 95 and above every spring on the standardized test that we were taking in every subject, she always felt like she was behind. And I said, "Sweetheart, what do you mean you're behind?" And she said, "Well, we just don't ever do school." Because she was thinking she had not filled in enough workbook pages.
She had never been to a traditional school. So her internal wiring was what was telling her she needed something different to document and confirm her education.
And so I bought some workbooks. You can do ACE, you can do Rod and Staff, you can adapt any number. You could get a Becca workbooks or any kind of workbooks for that student of yours that needs to feel like they're doing school by filling in the blanks. And after she had finished we did our devotions in the morning, and I feel like no matter what curriculum you have, you need to have a routine that you kind of have a family expectation where the kids know what to expect every day. And not that every day is going to be the same, but you need to have a general routine. And I would give her some time after breakfast to sit down and do school. And she would take her workbooks and all the different subjects, and she would just fly through filling in those blanks. And then she would finish all six of her little workbooks and say, "Okay, now we can play." And we would... You know, she would do her piano and her writing, and we would do the read alouds, and where she could color and draw or cut or whatever it was that she was wanting to do. But then she could breathe easy because she had done school. It was. She was scoring way high every year. But by the time she was 8 or 9, she felt like she needed to do school.
Yeah, so school and learning are two different things. And so some of your children will need a structured path, not the whole way, but as in our daughter's case, it took us a while to figure out what was happening. But once she had something where she could in some way measure her progress, she was okay to learn other ways that the rest of the family was learning. And so just be aware of your students and their differences. It's not all about the teacher. In fact, a small portion of it's about the teacher. Because, after all, it's the student who's doing most of the learning. We're learning along with them. So it does need to fit their approach and their style, and but it needs to be something that you're comfortable with as well. And so we had a traditional learner, and then we've had some all the way over here. We tend to be more what we call loosey-goosey. You know, we tend to be over on this side. It's not the right way. It was just the Smith household way. So if you are a strict...
Remember that I was a student that was bored to tears all through junior high up, pretty much. I was just bored, and I was frustrated because I wanted to move forward, and I was having to wait and be held back. I wanted to read because I love to read. And all the time, I'm an auditory processor. So when a teacher was teaching, I would have a book, the like science book up, but I would have my literature book that I would be reading while she was teaching. That's pretty frustrating to a teacher when they realize you're reading and say, Jan Caldwell, what did I say? And I would look up and I would tell her what she just said. Because I can do that. I can process a couple of conversations going on at the same time. And they would say, put away your book. And I'm like, I just told you what you said. You know, and just... And as an auditory learner, then if I wasn't reading a book, then I'm sitting there listening. And as something would register and I would be excited about it, for me to process it, guess what has to happen? It's got to come out of my mouth. And I would stand it as long. I did not understand myself. And I was very upset with myself, like, why do you have to do that? But I would stand it as long as I could stand it. And then I would lean over to a friend and say, oh, so-and-so-and-so-and-so. Isn't that exciting? And I would be engaged. And they would say, Jan Caldwell, shut up. And I'm like, oh, I just did not work in the classroom.
So if you find that you, like Zan, had a... auditory learner. She talked about Ty this morning, and Jan was an auditory learner, is an auditory learner. You have to allow time in your day to pause and let your auditory learner talk about it all and just ramble and chatter, because that's the way they're learning. And so it may go against your grain to do that, but that is a learning style. We're talking about educational approaches. So whatever the style of your learner, whatever you can do it within the approaches. So,
but that's why I wanted to have more freedom and flexibility than what was offered in a set curriculum, because I didn't want my students to have to be forced to do the next page if that's not something that they were interested in or wanting to do, and they wanted to skip to the back and learn about that back there. I wanted to give them more freedom and flexibility because of the frustration that I had had. Now, you're coming at it from a different perspective. So somewhere between what you need as a teacher and what your student needs as a learner is going to be the right place for you to land as a family. And so, dads, be aware of what's going on here, and don't hold them to what your learning style is, because that's a factor too, or yep. What your perception of school is, because you want to encourage your wife. You want to come alongside and support the family in what is going on and be the cheerleader for this whole family, the undergirding of what is happening, not the criticizer, not the bring down the gavel person, crack the whip.
So those of you who are taking note of where we are, we've talked about four of the five. We talked about the traditional, the classical, the living books approach, and then the unschoolers, but there's a fourth one here, and that is the unit studies approach. Okay? And unit studies, for families who have lots of children of different ages, a lot of people have used a unit studies approach because they can't keep up with all the different books at all the different levels and all the different grades, and so they try to educate as a family unit, and a unit studies fits that family situation well for those that can tolerate that approach. And so the approach looks like all the children are together, and let's stick with the World War II model, because that's one that we did, is that we said we're going to learn about World War II education or World War II information, And so you may do, there may be stories that you read about World War II. And guess what? The four-year-old will learn four-year-old level information out of the same story that a 14-year-old learns, because they have enough mental pegs to put that information on, and they will learn other things. And the problem with this is, if you're really into measuring the knowledge that they have gained, and you really want to document their progress by some type of written test or something like that, it's going to drive you nuts, because it's really hard to measure what they actually know except by talking to them. Can you see that? And so sometimes it's not a good fit, because your personal integrity says, I need to know where they are and measure it and document it and keep the records. And so it has its strengths and it has its weaknesses. And so the further you get to this side of the approaches, the harder it is to measure what progress you're making. It is not saying that you're not making progress. It's just hard to defend the fact that you are. And so depending on what you are, your situation, maybe your in-laws are putting lots of pressure on you, and they're needing, you know, every time you have a family gathering, they're quizzing your kids, and they're wanting to say, how do you know that they're learning anything? And maybe you're being pressed to be more structured, either by the family or by the government, or, you know, so the more you have to document or defend your learning, the more you'll tend to be over in this direction or this category. So unit studies may be whenever the family did World War II, she interviewed World War II veterans. Do you think you get any valid information from a World War II veteran that had boots on the ground, who was a paratrooper that landed in the middle of the night? He had his little clicker in his pocket so he would know anybody who had a clicker was on his side, and anybody that he encountered in the dark and didn't have a clicker, that was the enemy, and they would have hand-to-hand combat in the dark. And, you know, they talked about, you know, how that all happened. Do you think that the children remembered those stories? Absolutely. They didn't remember what date or what year it was exactly, but they remember the essence of the battle of the D-Day invasion and whatever it was that the veterans would talk about. And it just brought some of the information to life. So you can see how there's a lot of energy in this type of approach. And it's good, but it's a little scary.
And we studied motorcycles and we studied airplanes, because those were used. We had to go to the library and look up, what does a Jew look like? Because we had only had one Jewish family that I knew of in our area, and they looked just like everybody else. So how could they tell the Jews from anybody else? And it was really fascinating. And we read several books, including Corrie ten Boom's The Hiding Place and the Anne Frank Diary. And so I challenge you and encourage you to open your heart and your mind to something that you want to learn about, and to learn about those things, and to look for resources that are out there. There are movies about it. There are so many books, so many new books about World War II. I've read a lot of books in the last 2 years that are brand new out. The point is that you want to learn, and you want to grow, and you want to do school. You want them to be fascinated with learning and excited about learning, and you want them to want to continue to learn. And all the guilt shaming that can happen in the homeschool circle, you've got to put aside and say, God, help me to run the race that's set before me. Because there can be that happen. Just in the last 6 years, we had gone to a big conference in the Houston area, and not as speakers, but as leaders. And I was considering having this particular lady come and speak as one of our speakers. And she represented one of the classical models. And I just had looked through their books, and I just thought it looked great. And she got to lecturing and doing a session like this on this approach. And she began to talk about the timeline and how you needed to know about this this group of people at this period, and then this, and then the next group. And I got to thinking, ooh, I've never heard of those people. I don't know that. And I've never heard of them. What is that? And not only did I feel ignorant and uneducated, and I have a college degree, not that that means anything, but I considered myself generally an educated person. I had already homeschooled 4 children for 12 grades. And I thought, I did a terrible job. We didn't learn any of that stuff. And I have 4 successful, wonderful adult children that I love, that love God, and that love one another. And I was only there for half of the lecture, and I went out to Roger, and I said, she's not coming to Louisiana. Not because of her, but this, I don't want to put that on women to think that they can't homeschool if they can't cover all of those things, because I didn't cover any of those things, and I really think I did a pretty good job. So don't get under the pile.
Yeah.
You cannot cover it all. Run the race that God has set before you.
So every one of these approaches, you will have educational gaps. You miss some stuff. The strength of the traditional is that someone who is educated in those subjects has decided for you what you will cover. They're prescribing for your family, your student, what to learn about, or at least be exposed to, whether they learn it or not. But the further you move from the traditional model, the more you are responding to learning about life as life unfolds or as passions drive your student. And so it gets a little more scary and exciting at the same time. Now, sometimes it's not so much your style or your approach that drives this decision. Maybe it's that you are pregnant and you're very sick and you cannot get up and do your normal thing. And you need something that kind of guides your children for this time period. And you'll need something with more and more structure that you're not guiding it. And so life situations sometimes guide you to more structure rather than more flexibility. So different stages of life will help, will cause you to change what you're doing. Sometimes it's your children's needs that will cause you to change. But having this framework of knowing what book, how books are written, they're all written from one of these approaches. Okay? And so just being aware when you buy some curriculum, you can ask the vendor, now what approach, if you use that word, they'll know what you're asking. What approach does this use? And then you can say, oh, well, this is really a Charlotte Mason or Living Books type of curriculum. And then you can go, oh, okay, this is going to be more stories and literature and less focused on the facts, but more about the general picture. You know, or it's a unit studies. So we just need you to know kind of where things are, and then you can find what fits you. Now, going back to the 5 Flavors of Homeschooling website, they do have a test. It'll say, do you prefer this or that? And it'll be a question about something that doesn't sound like education, but they're related to these approaches. And they'll say, and one of them kind of relates to one approach or the other. And it has a whole series of questions. So tests like that do help you to go, I thought I was this, but really I'm that, you know. And so it helps you to know you. And then you also can keep in mind what your students are like. And it'll help you to kind of find something that is the best fit for your family. The time, it is, we've got 10 minutes, okay. 11 minutes or something like that.
So you want your children to do math. Now, math is something that you can incorporate into unit studies, but for the most part, you're going to need to choose some sort of math curriculum. As much as you can use games, then use games. And so there's everything from completely online, like teaching textbooks that goes at your child's own individual pace, to some of the more kinesthetic type approaches like Matthew C. So where it's more of a hands-on type approach. And then there's Saxon math and a number of new curriculums in between. But choose something and go for it. In the high school years, you might do something like Konos, an online, not Konos, what is it? Starts with the free learning.
I was thinking about something else, and I didn't listen.
It'll pop into our mind in a second.
Khan Academy.
Yeah. Yes, uh-huh. That you can. There are ways that your child can progress well beyond what your capacity for math teaching is by resources that are available online. So if a child has a real bent that direction and you're like, I don't know where this came from, let them go. There are free resources even online. So a lot of times the limit is how much you can spend in terms of curriculum choices. But there's so much online that's free. There's a Charlotte Mason whole approach that's online that's free. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a high-quality education, and the library is your friend. So have some resources that I encourage you to invest in, like Kathy Duffy has a great book on all the different things that are out there on the market, all different curriculum choices that will help answer some of the questions you have about different curriculum choices. So, and make sure that you incorporate history and geography. Again, there are tremendous online resources for the Rick Steen's Travel the World with Rick Steen. There are geography games that are Steve's. S-T-E-V. It's something like that.
Yeah, Rick Steve's, S-T-E-V-E, apostrophe S. It doesn't have apostrophe in the URL, but you can Google Rick Steve's. He's really a tour guide. So he developed all these tour information about, you know, what to do when you're in Rome and what to do when you're in Paris and what to do, you know, things that you should see if you go to North Africa or things like that. So but people began to use that as kind of one of these loosey-goosey types of approaches over here, whether it's unschooling or unit studies or, you know, it's almost kind of like a living book. It's just kind of taking life's experiences. And so you can learn a lot from resources like that. And that can be a curriculum for you, in essence, a geography curriculum. And then there's
something
the online
like that, or the typing things that are available online. Sometimes you need to work with a special needs child or to sit down and nurse the baby, and you really don't want to read aloud while you're doing that. Then you can put the kids on a computer or the one that can't read yet, and they can start doing typing. Or there's just all kinds of ways to keep your children actively engaged in learning while you're doing what needs to be done. And make sure to incorporate audiobooks into your day. If you're needing to fold clothes, then get all the piles in the living room, have on a great audiobook, and use it through your library. You can have things on your phone that come through your library, free loan library. And of course, we all know that there's Audible and other
subscription services
that you can buy books, but use your library. It's a wonderful resource that you can utilize and to do so pretty easily.
And can I say something else about the library? Usually librarians love homeschooling families because they love books and they love learning. And get to know your local librarian, and so introduce yourself and your children, and let them begin to learn what it is that your children love, and they will go, oh, we got this new book in, and your child's going to love it, and they'll hold it for you. So just develop those relationships for resource people, and they will bring things into your life that you didn't go looking for. And so people like that are great to know, the librarians and in your area.
And they have reference materials that they don't loan out, that just stay in-house. So ask them if you can see what books they have. Often they'll have very large books that have pictures of artworks or all different kinds of animals or some really big, beautiful books that were very expensive that they don't loan out. But if your children are well-behaved and under control, then they would gladly give you the right to sit and peruse those books and to talk about things. So ask God to open your mind to new resources that are available to you that you're not having to buy. On one of those cold winter days when you're about to go stir crazy and you need to get out of the house, go to the Winnipeg Library if you're within an hour's driving distance and they've cleared the road, and you can spend the day at the library with your children seeing some of those reference materials that would make a great field trip to the library.
And so I asked the question in an earlier session, can you teach something that you do not know yourself? And you absolutely can, especially if you tap into resources like people who are, that's their passion and their interest. We knew nothing about art when we got started. I mean, we knew what our colors were, and that was about it, you know? And so, but we had a friend who was passionate about art. She was an art teacher. She studied art history, and she and her husband both were very into the art scene. And so we wanted our children to be knowledgeable about art. And so we encouraged her or invited her, and in fact, her children were home educating. And so we just kind of, as a co-op, us and I think one other family, we did kind of an art unit to where she explained the landscape of the art scene. And you know what? I feel like I'm an art historian today because I, with my children, learned art from this lady. And so now I can go into a hotel and I see a picture on the wall and I know who painted it. And so
it's really fascinating. You see what you know, and as you learn with your children, you'll start going, oh, that's so-and-so. And it's exciting. It's exciting to learn with your children. And so ask God for people, places, and things that He can bring into your life that help you learn, and use your curriculum, no matter what you choose, as a tool, not the rule, so that you can learn along with your children. Too much hopping around when you just are trying something totally different every year, when you're just floundering and saying, there's got to be something that works with this kid, that can be disjointed. You know, give some time and some space to something before you just totally ditch and try. Be careful about that. That's one warning, is you don't want to cause confusion to the kids in your life.
Regardless of the approach that you're using this year, you can do any of these things like the art, history. Let's say if you're more of a textbook, you would use a book about art to learn about it. But also you may go actually see the art, but take the book with you and go, see that? Here's one just like it. Can you see the style is the same? And so, but if you were on this side, the book wouldn't be relevant to you. You would just say, take me to a museum. And you would want the tour guide to walk around and just talk and explain what was going on in history and why did they paint that way? That looks really weird. You know, but these were the issues that they were struggling with as an artist. And you can see how then they go, wow, I can see that, you know, and it makes sense. But they don't even know what year that was, you know, because that's a fact. But they were more into concepts. So regardless of your approach, you can still say, I want to learn about ammunition. And ammunition can be facts, or you can talk about the situation of the ammunition. And so whatever the issue is you're wanting to learn about, it can fit any one of these approaches. So it's not about you're going to learn more with this style or whatever. It's just that it kind of fits your brain right.
So the bottom line is that God gave you your children. He knows them and He knows you. And He intends for you to educate them for His glory. And that you can only do the best you can do. But you've got to do something. You got to move forward. And to rest in Him that it's going to come out okay in the end. That if you are moving forward and asking for wisdom for your family, and you make a decision and you move toward accomplishing school for this year, that it's going to be okay. And you need to take some of that pressure off of everything having to be measurable. because God wants us to walk by faith. And he's going to throw things in your path, challenges and difficulties, unexpected trips or vacations or blessings, all kinds of things that vary, because he wants you to rest in him and to walk by faith, because he's given you these children. He's given you the commandment to love them and to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And you know what he requires? Obedience. Not perfection, just obedience and trust. That's what he wants. So may God give you the grace to obey and to trust.
I talk to, in my medical practice, I talk to mothers with newborn babies a lot. And my message to you and to them is the same. Trust your instincts. Trust your instincts. If you sense that it is not going right, look for how it should change. Because you know, one bad day doesn't make a bad situation. But if every day is tears and fears and frustration, you need to make a change, a different approach in some way. And so trust your instincts as you go forward. You are the right parent for your children.
We hope you enjoyed this recording, which was sponsored by The Learning House. For more information on The Learning House, you can visit their website at learninghouse.ca.